This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
On today's episode of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors, we're joined by Chris Phillips, the host of The Spurs Up Show, to help us preview Vanderbilt in South Carolina coming up Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff on the SEC Network. It's homecoming in Columbia, and we dive into it with Chris. But also, we dive into the bombshell report from our very own Will Byram on Thursday night that turned some heads. Some of it was surprising. Some of it wasn't surprising to see in regards to Joey Lynch and the state of this offense for Vanderbilt football. Can Clark Lee fix it? We'll see. He's got 6 weeks left to do it, and it starts on Saturday in Columbia. We'll see what happens against the Gamecocks, but Will and I also go through our three things to watch and touch on an interesting piece of news coming from Vanderbilt baseball. The first ever Tim Corbin recruit, Carter Hawkins, has been named the Chicago Cubs general manager. We'll touch on all that and much more coming right up here on The Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Let's ride.
You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who believe black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome into The Door Report. It is episode 115. It is October 15th, 2021. We are powered by the great folks at Alaco Fine Wood Floors. And Will, this should be pretty fun. We've got a lot to dive into. Not necessarily the game coming up on Saturday, but we've got a piece of baseball news. We've got, of course, our three things to watch on Saturday. But you released a pretty decent article on Thursday night that turned some heads. So we'll touch on that. But Will, this will be a focus on the deeper issues with this team and where they're at. We've talked about where they're at. We know where they're at. But this episode is going to be mostly about the offensive issues we talked about and where, you know, because these issues go deep. Okay, these are deep issues, deep rooted issues. And the article addressed a lot of that. So we'll give you your chance to kind of elaborate on it. But man, it's South Carolina week, I guess, huh?
It's South Carolina week, I guess. That's a great way to put it. You have basically, I don't know what year it was. I think it was 2015 between Vanderbilt and Tennessee. It was dubbed the Toilet Bowl. Yeah. Just because it was clearly the 13th and 14th teams in the conference. And we have that this week with South Carolina mm-hmm. and Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt obviously has had their struggles against South Carolina in recent years. And you'll elaborate more on that when we do the deep dive, a little bit more preview into this actual game. But man, it is a matchup of bad, bad offenses. And this is going to be quite the show on the field on Saturday.
Yes, it is. I you know, we talk about not seeing a lot of defense. This could be a potentially low scoring game with not
this could be
offense.
This could be a defensive struggle, but I think I would classify that as an offensive struggle more than a defensive struggle. If you do see those low scores on the scoreboard there,
this is an offensive struggle game and with the best of them. So we will dive into it. We'll touch on Will's piece. Also, Will, Carter Hawkins, former Vandy boy, Tim Corbin's first ever baseball recruit. How about that? He has been named the Cubs general manager. Want to touch on that as well. We'll get to our three things to watch. And Chris Phillips from the Spurs Up Show joins the podcast later. Before we get to the South Carolina preview, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @door_report and Instagram @door.report. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes.
No matter what style you're going for, you can trust your flooring job to Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Take a walk through the woods in your home every day. Get your flooring job started today by calling 615-356-0303. Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Craftsmanship you can stand on.
All right, well, let's dive into it. We will get to the South Carolina preview eventually. But Thursday night was pretty fun. We had built up some steam on Twitter, and we got some fans excited like we usually do. And I think the tweet that led up to it got about 14 quote tweets. We had plenty of comments on it. And Will, I mean, I think it was just as big as how we built it up. Now, this necessarily wasn't a breaking news piece by any means, but Essentially what this was, we have a source, you had a source, and you dove into it. And that's our job as a Vanderbilt site, a Vanderbilt podcast, and Vanderbilt fans at this point in the season deserved answers. And that was the bottom line. And people have been clamoring for them. And we knew there were deeper issues with this team, and we got a lot of them. And will they likely go a lot deeper than just your article? But initially here, I think a lot of people were surprised, but I think there were a lot of people that were basically accepting the fact that, I'm not surprised all these things were true. So I'm going to give you the chance to kind of dive into it and because this was something that, like I said, was pretty controversial, but then again, a lot of these things were not surprised that they were true.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into in this article. And of course, I didn't use every piece of information, every quote from our sources in this article. I used direct quotes from our source and sources and did not use everything, because if anybody read this article and said this was way too harsh on certain things, boy, you would have loved the original full quotes, which I thought was some of the things were obviously, I'm just going to go through the list here because there's a lot to get into. But number one, I want to address that a lot of the feedback was actually positive. I expected a lot more negative feedback just because you are attacking the core of this team that I think Vanderbilt fans in general like the players on this team, and they like the staff as people, but the team just hasn't been successful. And so the feedback for the most part was pretty positive. But number one, I saw a lot of things saying that our site, me and you, Billy, are looking for clicks, and this is clickbait on a new site. I want everyone out there to know me and Billy don't make money from that. This is not our full time. Like, we don't have a paywall. There is no ulterior motive out there. We enjoy doing this. We're passionate about it. Maybe one day you can accuse us of being clickbait. We are not there. That was not even in my thought writing this article. In my opinion, it would be a disservice to Vanderbilt fans to not write this article. And I think most Vanderbilt fans knew something was going on and know something is going on within that team. This offense should not be as bad as it is. I addressed that as far as statistics are concerned with the talent that they do have. But you can't have everything be positive. Obviously, there are going to be issues within a locker room. If your offense is this bad, if you're 14th in the SEC, 121st out of 130 in offensive production in the entire FBS, have any of these people saying this is just a load of crap, it's a nothing burger, have you ever stepped foot in a locker room? It is almost impossible to unite a locker room on a championship level team. There's going to be dissension, issues with play calling, issues with personnel usage. But when it's on a good team, those things are kind of silenced and very small subsects of a team. Mm-hmm. When you have a team that is 2-4 with a loss to an FCS program, the production that they've had thus far throughout the year, the outside noise coming in, there is going to be a rift in that locker room. So I kept seeing where people would say players reached out or a player reached out saying that they don't feel that way about Joey Lynch. I'm like, okay, no shit. It's called a rift. There's a split, meaning that portions of the locker room are a fan of the system that is in place, and there are portions of the locker room that are not. And that would be the definition of a split and tension building. And I think the best way to do this is just kind of go through quotes, because I do want to get your thoughts on this, Billy. And I do want to say one thing. I trust our source and sources. I fully do. There's a reason that they are remaining anonymous and we've not released those sources. If you knew who the sources were, if I did release, you would say probably shouldn't have released that. So there we go. But there's always the possibility that even though we did our best to confirm all of this information, that this is a small, small subsect that has reached out and that we have been in communication with about this. That is a possibility. I don't believe that to be the case. And I trust the source and what I wrote, and I stand behind what I wrote until I am proven wrong. I don't believe I will be proven wrong, but if I am, I will correct the article and adjust what I've said. And so
we wouldn't have put this out if we didn't think this was a solidified source.
Absolutely not.
The idea of, obviously there are players that disagree, that's obvious. I mean, we know that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, this is,
I expected that. Absolutely.
This is not a entire team agreement, but this is something that's going on with this team right now. And this was a source that we trusted. And I want to get that out because, mm-hmm. It's something that happens in every type of report like this, and you're going to see rifts. So I wanted to just get that out because, we wouldn't have put this out bottom line if we didn't trust the source.
Absolutely. And I want Vanderbilt football to succeed. I have been at all of the stuff. I was at the UNLV loss. I was at the Temple game in 2014. I was at the UConn win recently. I was at the ETSU loss. I want this team to be successful. I am not putting this was not put out by our site to stir the pot for no reason. This was put out because there are issues going on that need to be addressed within that locker room, and public pressure is the best way to have this administration and staff address these issues. So that is why we put it out. Now let's get into the article, and I want to hear your thoughts, Billy, because we didn't discuss this in great detail before I released it. So I am actually genuinely curious on your thoughts here. So I'll just go ahead and give the direct quote. The entire offense is upset with Lynch's play calling. They work on short mid-range passing game all week and seldom use it. Cam Johnson and Ben Bresnahan in particular. The O-line is upset with the new blocking scheme and field coach Ross Amundo had a much better plan, referring to the offensive line coach in 2020 that actually performed pretty well with the talent that he had on that roster. And Billy, this has been our complaint the entire year, and the short mid-range passing game is non-existent. So this was just basically confirming a lot of things for us. That's why we didn't title this breaking news. It wasn't breaking news. It was a bombshell of the tension growing in the locker, but there was no breaking news. This was confirmation of issues that you can see from the outside, and now you're getting a deeper understanding of just how deep these problems go.
And with the offensive line, Will, I go back to Clark Lee. He retained Javon Hay. And Javon Hay was, if I'm not mistaken, one of the only coaches that were retained from the old staff. I could be completely wrong there. But Pete Rossomondo was a tremendous offensive line coach. And he was well-respected, not only in the SEC, across the nation. Now, where is he? He's at Will Healy. He's on Will Healy's staff at Charlotte. And that kind of points to the respect that he has across the country. And he could have gone off to a D1 school as well. So with the offensive line there, I go to that issue. And I point a little bit, I'm not saying this is the main issue there, but they loved Pete Rossomondo, that entire group. And I know they returned three different offensive linemen. That should, we all thought, we were talking about that as a positive and saying, we got three new offensive linemen coming back. This should be a positive for this team. But I think a lot of that is, yes, AJ Blazek is a new coach. He's a new guy. He's a new face from North Dakota State. And he's a good coach. I'm not putting this on AJ Blazek, but for a new coach to come in and completely change everything, that is going to create rifts and that's going to create challenges. And so I'm with the quote there. I mean, I'm not surprised there are some issues there. Now, that may not be every single offensive lineman, but this happens in every locker room. This happens in every team. And I think that's what the offensive line issues kind of point to, the fact that they had a lot of respect for Rossomondo. Now you get Coach Blazek coming in with his new ideals, and that happens.
Yeah, and I mean, the offensive line this year, this is another point, is I was quoting straight from this source and then giving my thoughts on the quote. And I didn't necessarily agree with all of the gripes that were given by our source and sources. And this is one of the cases. I didn't include a lot of this in the article. There's a ton of information in there. I tried to do my best to be objective on all sides. The offensive line this year has been middle of the pack in the SEC. Mm-hmm. We can complain that we have seen pressure, but actual charted pressure, they're a top half performing SEC line in the SEC. So all this garbage about the offensive line, yes, they've had trouble creating holes. They've had trouble finishing the red zone. But the offensive line is not the reason this offense is not successful.
They're not the issue.
And maybe it's the scheme and why the offense is so bad, and that's allowing the offensive line to not show their issues. But they're performing middle of the pack right now. And with Vanderbilt where they are, and they've played Georgia and Florida, the two best defensive lines they'll play this entire season. And they've already faced them. Granted, there were four out of conference games, but their statistics are not bad. Now, their running game, they haven't been able to open up holes consistently, mm-hmm. and the red zone struggled, but the actual pass protection has not been that awful. Yes. The short and mid-range passing game has been something that we've touched on a lot. But moving on in this article, the most shocking quote in this whole article was about Clark Lee and a possible kind of issues that he's having with Joey Lynch and what is happening on Saturdays, as opposed to what they're seeing during the week. And the quote, end quote, Lee is very short with Lynch more and more each week, and Lynch is showing signs of stress to the offense. And I think we saw some of that, Billy, in a press conference when Clark Lee directly said, we have to be more creative on offense. We can't just hand off inside zone every time.
Right.
And that was a pretty shocking comment from a coach. You don't usually see coaches openly criticize the play calling of their offensive coordinator. And I agree with Clark Lee. That was a valid criticism from him that obviously opponents are recognizing how predictable this play calling is.
I'll jump in here. Well, with Joey Lynch, I want to point to, again, similar to AJ Blazek, he wasn't necessarily the most proven of offensive coordinators. And you could, you know, Andy Ludwig was a proven offensive coordinator. Right now, this offense, and we've talked about it, we talked about it last episode, this offense is performing better than this season. You know, this offense is, or no, this, this
performing
offense,
worse.
This, yeah. Yes, worse. This offense last season with Andy Ludwig is performing better than this season. That's what I'm trying to say. And we've talked about that. We talked about that multiple times, and that was something that we learned against ETSU. And we said, okay, there are issues here. There is something going on that we are not aware of, that, you know, we wouldn't be surprised to hear and talking about the riffs. But, Will, Joey Lynch, he was named the quarterback coach. Let's get that.
And passing game coordinator. Yes, quarterback coach and passing game coordinator.
Yes, that's his title coming into Vanderbilt. And David Rye was the offensive coordinator. So I think initially – we all should have been, you know, suspicious of things like this when Clark Lee ended up transferring that title over to Joey Lynch. And that, I think we glanced over that and said, okay, you know, whatever that, but that doesn't happen. That doesn't typically happen, especially that close to, I think that was before the ETSU game or maybe after, leading up to the ETSU game. That was when it happened. So, but apparently, you know, he made the switch right after the first week of fall camp, and that's not a good sign. So I think a lot of this, Will, is yes, Joey Lynch has struggled with his new role as expected. I mean, he came in here expecting to be the quarterback coach and passing game coordinator, not necessarily calling the plays. But you haven't seen any creativity, and that's what we've been hankering for the past 3, 4, 5 weeks ever since that ETSU game. So for me, Will, I'm again, that's another quote that I look at and I say, no surprise. I mean, that's not a shocker. And I think oftentimes the head coach and the offensive coordinator they're meeting every day and they're talking. But you can understand that type of quote from Clark Lee. But again, I don't think a lot of us expected to see something like that from Clark Lee. So I'm with that quote. And I think a lot of Andy fans weren't necessarily surprised to hear that. But for Joey Lynch, man, I mean, yes, he's in a tough spot, but boy, the way this offense is played, it's making him seem like he doesn't have any experience calling plays. That's what I think has shocked a lot of Andy fans.
Yeah, I think if Clark Lee could go back and do it all over again, he would hire an experienced offensive coordinator because this entire staff is inexperienced, and he hired a NFL wide receiver.
Yes.
Ranks, and he hired Joey Lynch, who had 1 year of experience as an offensive coordinator at Colorado State. And that, for a former defensive coordinator who's moving into his first head coaching role at an SEC program, there's a reason you don't see that. And there's a reason you don't see offensive coordinators move from a program like Colorado State to Vanderbilt or any other, really SEC is specifically different, but just Power Five in general, because the coaching and schemes and talent and athletes, and it's a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. Week in, week out, it is a whole different ballgame than playing a one-off game, because teams can adjust to what you were doing a lot better. You have the best defensive minds in all of football in the SEC, and that's obviously going to create issues for you. But I think we did just kind of glaze over that change, because I think they came in my mind, they were co-offensive coordinators to begin with. So when the play calling duties got handed from the, quote, official offensive coordinator to Joey
Lynch.
You don't
see that very often either.
No, that was
offensive coordinator.
Yeah, there was funky things going on with that from the beginning. And obviously Clark Lee knows he's made a mistake. And I think I'm just afraid of the sunk cost fallacy in investments. I've put this much money into a project. I've put $1 million into this project. It sucks. It's not doing anything. But I've already put $1 million into it, so I'm going to use that to calculate my return on this investment and whether or not I should keep pouring money into this. Or what you were supposed to do is not look at your previous investment, which in this case is this season, and at the end of the year, just say it's time to start fresh and evaluate who I would hire if I was starting fresh right now.
Yes.
And there's a 0% chance Coach David Rye and Coach Joey Lynch are hired if it happens after this season.
Yes. So, and there's a lot of proven offensive coordinators out there that I think, you know, we've talked about no one necessarily wanting the Vanderbilt offensive coordinator job, but there are guys out there that are proven and even more proven than a guy like Joey Lynch and David Rye that will take that job. And we talked about it last podcast, Will. This is going to be a defining stretch here for Clark Lee the next year or so to see if he goes out and finds an offensive coordinator and a proven one who can come in and take control of the offense, unlike two unproven guys and a former NFL receivers coach and a guy that was at Colorado State for half a season. So yes, Clark Lee, that was a mistake, and he knows that. And so, you know, it's going to be a big next year. And to see if there's a guy out there that'll come in and take the job and take control of that offense, and especially the quarterback room, which we'll be talking about as well.
Yeah, I hope the offense comes out against South Carolina and just blows the barn doors off and is unstoppable and puts up 500 yards. And
that's the
I'm
thing,
like, well, obviously, Will, the tension wasn't too bad. I didn't want any of this information. I felt obligated to share it, but I hate this narrative right now that is, in my opinion, true, that there is a split, because I like the idea of a united locker room, and Clark Lee was able to unite this already divided locker room. And that just, I think they've done a good job of shaping the outside perspective in that way, but clearly there are underlying issues. And I think we could talk about this for a long time, Billy, but I do want to get to a portion here about a portion of the article I really debated putting in, which was the quotes directly about Will Shepard. Because me and you specifically do not like criticizing individual guys, individual players. Me and you specifically make a point to never say this guy sucks or this guy stinks. Because I always say there's a big difference between how I talk about professional athletes in the NFL and how I talk about college athletes. If I say Taylor Lewan, I don't believe this, but Taylor Lewan for the Tennessee Titans, he sucks. He's bad. I say he is, as a player, bad. When I'm discussing a player like Will Shepard or Ben Bresnahan, I say they played poorly or they are playing bad, because they are not professional athletes. They're developing, they're growing. There's no telling how talented these and how much better 3-4 years. So those quotes I really debated putting in because I didn't want to create friction within that locker room. Mm-hmm. But once again, it's from a source and sources. I wanted to be objective and completely transparent as to what the information I was receiving. And I think people criticized me putting that in there. And I basically, you didn't read what I wrote if you think that was the point of this article.
Yes. And what I liked about it, what I liked about it, Will, is the fact that under those quotes, you said, I've liked Will Shepard. I've always liked Will Shepard as a player. And I completely agree with you on that. And Will Shepard is a guy that, yes, he has talent, but the issue here was the evaluation of him and how the coaching staff, they had their morals.
That was the entire overarching point was this specific situation creating disruption in the locker room because they had a policy and they didn't stick to it.
Yes, and this wasn't necessarily knocking Will Shepard. This was more on the coaching staff and their handling of Will Shepard and his evaluation, because they had their earn it policy. And apparently, according to this source, Vanderbilt bypassed that. Their coaching staff did. And we're pointing at Joey Lynch here. He wants Will Shepard to get a lot of touches. And we're not necessarily opposed to that. But for Will Shepard, you know, he's got other guys around him. He's got Cam Johnson. He's got Chris Pierce. And again, I hate going at the guy, and I never would. We never do, like you said. But for Will Shepard in this offense, you know, his role has been talked about and has been controversial at times. Not saying he shouldn't get any touches, but you've got Cam Johnson, Ben Bresnahan, who have not gotten nearly enough touches, even Chris Pierce at times. And, you know, you've seen Devin Body also get a lot of touches as well. So I think a lot of this revolves around the amount of touches that certain guys are getting and certain guys are not getting. And that's what we're pointing at here. This is not an attack against Will Shepard himself. This is an attack on the offensive scheme and where it's going and where it might be headed. And that was all this was. So, Will, hopefully that's it. Again, this is a deep dive on it. I know you had a little bit on Cam Johnson here, and he's a guy that, you know, we've talked about a lot. And I love the guy. He's a Nashville kid. He went to Brentwood Academy. He's done a lot for this university. But I'm speaking for a lot of people. I think we expected a similar type all SEC season potentially from this guy. I mean, he came in here as a senior, his fourth year in this offense, and I think a lot of people expected him to shine and to blow up. And when you don't see it, there's some questions to be asked, not about him personally, but about this staff and how they're using him. And that's what we're pointing to here, Will. So again, I want to give credit to you again on this piece. And I think you did a great job. And you know, for people saying that, you know, I mean, 2 weeks ago, Will, we had people tagging.
We were sunshine pumpers 2 weeks ago. And now we're releasing stuff that's too negative and detrimental to the team.
I don't know what
I said. We are just giving objective opinions based on what we see. And I don't think people are used to that, specifically in Vanderbilt sports media, because my complaint, why I joined this podcast, is that Vanderbilt media coverage, for the most part, is not in-depth and critical enough, and they don't talk about things like fans talk about things. And they don't discuss in-depth the issues the same way that other SEC media, just in general, covering a team, covers Vanderbilt is not the same as it is at even Mississippi State. I do want to go back and just say one thing about Shepherd. Okay, because I had one more thing to say.
There we go.
Is I don't want this to come out as I don't think Shepherd should be on the field, but it is abnormal to have an entire receiver group returning, okay, the exact same guys, and a guy comes in that was basically just not on the field the previous season and now leads the league in leads the team in targets. And you've replaced, there's only so many targets that can go around. And Cam Johnson's has been, unfortunately, the player kind of left out. He only has 30 targets, ranking fourth on the team. That is just the offensive system not getting him the ball. And the overarching point of this article was not about Will Shepherd. It was not about Cam Johnson. It was not about Devin Body Jr. And if you read the entire article, you see that. There were two points, which is the offense being too complicated. And that shows in Will Shepherd not executing the routes properly, because if there's still miscommunication 6 games into the season, halfway through, everyone should know the offense and know their positions. And if they are not executing, running the wrong routes, it's on your offense, because these guys don't want to go out there and not execute plays. They want to succeed. He wants to put up numbers. And I hope he catches for 150 yards this Saturday. And B, the play calling by Lynch has, and this is the second point of this article, is Lynch's play calling has frustrated fans, the players, and Clark Lee. And I think that is the biggest thing of this article, is it confirmed what we have been talking about, which is the gripes about his bad offensive play calling, complacent offensive game plan, lack of imagination and creativity. It's not just us on the outside. Players feel it, coaches feel it, everyone feels it. So those were the two overarching points. And if people want to pick and cherry pick different quotes of what the source said, that is not what the source was getting at. That's not what the sources were getting at. And that's not what I was getting at in the article. So I'm glad we got to do a deep dive into that before we went into the South Carolina game.
Yes. And Will, these are the answers. These are only some of the answers that Vandy fans needed at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt fans were looking for answers. They're saying, what's wrong with this offense? What's wrong with the communication and the organization? Well, there's a lot wrong. And we want to point that out. We want to help fans. This is a Vanderbilt, this is a podcast by Vanderbilt fans for Vanderbilt fans. And we are for the fans. We want to help the fans as much as we can.
He stole Barstool's by the common man for the common man. Yes, I kind of like it. By the Vanderbilt fans for the Vanderbilt.
And also, we love the university. And Vanderbilt fans are passionate. And I quote tweeted your piece, and I said, Yes, there are issues with the offense, but this more revolves around Vanderbilt's passionate fan base and their eagerness to see Clark Lee succeed.
I love seeing it. The negative, positive, whatever it is, if you're commenting that you hate what I wrote, or you're commenting you love what I wrote, or you hate what we tweeted, you love it. Either way, because love and hate are the two sides of the same coin. You can't have people that love it without people that hate it. That just means there's passion. There's a desire for this team to be successful. And we all want the same end result. I don't think that me and you, I don't think that there's any reason why we're not Paul Kaharsky gets accused a lot of times with the Titans of being negative just for the sake of being negative. I will never be negative just to come out and be negative. Now, I view things from a glass half empty perspective. You view them from a glass half full perspective. So obviously my takes are going to be a little bit more critical and more harsh. But I'm not just going to come on here and randomly create tension just to stir the pot for clicks. Because like I said, this is not our source of income. We are doing this because we are passionate about it. And we believe that Vanderbilt fans want something to cling on to where they can discuss the details of this team with a like-minded group of people and bring up talking points and discussion points. So
yes,
there's no clickbait related to this article.
No. I don't know if you saw the show on Netflix. This is not clickbait. This is nothing. This is nothing to that extent. But Will, again, credit to you. And if you haven't seen the piece, log on to our site, doorreport.com. It is up there. It's still up there.
TheDoorReport.com.
TheDoorReport.com. Yes. And Will, again, great job. And we'll continue to that'll be kind of the focus. We'll go back to that article constantly throughout the season and throughout this episode as well. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes, and we'll see where this offense goes, Will. All right, let's get into the South Carolina preview now. But I do have one piece to hit on before we do that. Carter Hawkins, Will. This is some baseball piece. And I don't know how deeply you've looked into this story, but it's an awesome story. And it's a feel-good Vandy baseball story, and I think it's one that a lot of Vandy fans needed at this point in the season, in the football season. But Carter Hawkins, he was Tim Corbin's first ever baseball recruit back in 2002. Now he's the general manager of the Chicago Cubs, and it's an incredible story. He played catcher at Vandy from 04 to 07. He ended up working in the Indians office, front office, for 14 years. Before joining Chicago, and he earned it, Will. And I tweeted out the Vandy boys family runs deep, and boy, do they. They've got three guys in the postseason right now, Dansby Swanson, Walker Buehler, and David Price. And now you see Corbin's first ever recruit. I love it. And it's something, it just keeps reminding you, Vandy boys they're a powerful brand and they keep growing. So I wanted to get that out before we dive into the preview.
The tentacles of Vanderbilt baseball and the Vandy boys are everywhere. It's amazing to see what Tim Corbin has done. He is. I say this and people kind of scoff, but he's turned Vanderbilt into the Alabama of college baseball.
Yes,
they basically are the university that you discuss as having so many major league players and so much broad reach as far as influence on the major league game.
It's the cool place.
It's crazy to think about what Tim Corbin has been able to do there. And the program was never bad, but it certainly was nothing even remotely close. And it just gives you a little bit of hope. Obviously, college baseball is much, much different than college football or college basketball, but it can be done. It can be done. If you get the right people in with the right support at the right time, it can be done at Vanderbilt, just like it can be done anywhere across the country. So pointing to that as a path to success, I don't think football will ever be able to get to that level. But pointing to that kind of, and I think that's what Clark Lee is trying to do. Has it been successful so far? Absolutely not. But you can see the path he is trying to travel alongside what Tim Corbin has done.
Yes, and I think his relationship with Corbin, it can't do anything else but help that program. And we'll see. Clark's got a long road ahead, just like Tim Corbin did. I mean, he didn't. His first College World Series appearance was 2011. He started at Vandy in 2002. So, you know, we never usually compare baseball and football, but that's the trajectory right now. Well, let's preview South Carolina. Vanderbilt travels to Columbia on Saturday, tomorrow. Vandy is 2-4. South Carolina is 3-3. The Gamecocks are 18-point favorites in this one. You can watch it 4 o'clock Eastern time at SEC Network. Vandy's coming off a 42-0 loss at Florida. And the Gamecocks are coming off a 45-20 beatdown at Tennessee. So both these teams, they're beat up. They've been through a lot. But you're going to see some passion. You're going to see some teams that are just hungry. And they'll do anything they can to get this win. Some notes here, Will, on the matchup. South Carolina leads the all-time series 26-4. The Gamecocks have won 12 straight over Vandy. And last year, South Carolina dominated Vanderbilt 41-0, and Kevin Harris, the running back, ran wild. Nearly 200 yards, 171 yards, 2 touchdowns. And, Will, interesting note here. I want to throw it back to, you know, you could say, quote-unquote, the glory days, at least the beginning for Vandy football. Vanderbilt won in Columbia in 2007. That was the last time they won in Columbia. DJ Moore had 2 interceptions in that one. So that's kind of where we're at with the last time Vanderbilt beat South Carolina on the road. If Mahoney or Jerkins or one of those guys could have a performance like DJ Moore, we'll see what could happen. But, Will, I want to point to last week for South Carolina. We'll dive into it. But South Carolina gave up 472 yards of offense. And this defense is they're not in a great spot right now. But Tennessee's offense is up there with statistically one of the best in the country. But offensively for South Carolina, they put up 370 yards of their own. So this, there was a lot of points in that one, not a lot of defense. The Gamecocks had 153 rushing yards, but in this game, Will, I expect that number to increase with him going up against a Vanderbilt defense that has struggled at times with big chunk plays offensively in the run game. You know, I talked about Kevin Harris. He dominated Vanderbilt last year, so it's tough to see how this defense is, you know, can contain him. I'm not saying they can't. We know Clark Lee is going to put up the best game plan he can defensively against him. But I think this will come down to Luke Doty, Gamecocks quarterback, and how much he can get going in the passing game. So, Will, those are some of the notes. And this is, I get, you know, this is the toilet bowl for this year in the SEC. And you know, Missouri is down there as well. But from our perspective, I think we both agree upon these two teams are down there in the basement of the SEC, no doubt.
I mean, it's undeniable. Just every statistical category is they are bottom of the SEC in a tier of their own. I mean, the battle of the bad, the toilet bowl, whatever you want to call it. You've got the two worst offenses in the conference by a lot. I mean, only two offenses, they're the only two offenses in the conference with below a 40% success rate. And they're sitting at 37% for South Carolina and 33%/34% for Vandy. Mm-hmm. So success rate is successful plays that gain yardage and are executed well. And that's a very low number. I mean, it's crazy how low. Vanderbilt's averaging 309 yards per game. South Carolina, 331, 14th and 13th. Passing yards per game, 195 for Vanderbilt. They're 14th. Rush yards per game for Vanderbilt, they're 12th with 113. Yards per pass attempt, 4.7 for Vanderbilt, 14th. Next closest is Texas A&M with 6 yards per passing attempt, which is a big gap. Yards per run, they're sitting with 3.6, 14th in the SEC. Next closest is Mississippi State, who runs the Mike Leach pass-happy spread offense with 4.14 yards per rush attempt. So they're falling below a team that literally prides themselves on barely running the football. And Vandy's yards per play, which is the key issue that came out against Florida, and the idea of Vanderbilt at one point had run 70 plays with 0 points versus Florida, who had run 48 and they had 42 points on the scoreboard.
It's crazy.
Vanderbilt's only averaging 4.28 yards per play, 14th in the SEC. South Carolina's not much better. They're 13th, averaging 5.17, but still almost a yard per play better. South Carolina runs a lot of that quick yardage passing game type stuff. So like you said, that their quarterback there, Doty, it's going to come down to his decision-making, and it's going to come down when we get to our things to watch and key things to watch throughout the game. This Vanderbilt defense is going to have to step up. And South Carolina definitely showed that regardless of this being deemed the toilet bowl, this is probably Vanderbilt's best chance at an SEC victory for the first time since, 2019?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And Will, you could see some offense in this one. You could see a display of offense, and we'll see what both these teams come up with offensively. But Will, before we get to the three things to watch, you know, South Carolina has had an interesting quarterback situation, just like Vanderbilt. And boy, are fans in for a treat on Saturday. You know, we're not getting to that at all. But the thing about South Carolina, Will, is they started with a grad assistant coach as their quarterback for the first year. Now they have a healthy Luke Doty. So that's the key. And we'll get to our three things to watch here, but that's going to be interesting to watch as well. Well, let's get to it. Three things to watch. I know I haven't even looked at yours. I think this is a better idea to do it. Not even, you know, blindly going at it here. But I'm going to start with, can Vandy create takeaways? And they did against Florida. They did. Now, it didn't create the best field position, but Deshaun Jerkins and Elijah McAllister both had picks, their first career picks. And I think at the beginning of the season, we said for this team, if they can create some takeaways, this offense is good enough to carry them into the end zone after that. But you didn't see much of that, and we haven't seen much of that. So I think, well, this defense last week, they did all they could to create momentum for this offense, but the offense couldn't cash in. So I think Vandy will, and this could be an idiotic take, but I think they have a legit shot to beat South Carolina if – it's a big if they can create takeaways. But not just takeaways. The offense must carry that momentum over – given to them by the defense. And that has been Coach Lee's talking point, complementary football. And we hear about that a lot as coach speak, but that reigns true with this team. I mean, they have yet to play four quarters of complementary football. And if they can this weekend, South Carolina is beatable. And I think they've got a shot. But again, they have to, there's a lot of ifs there. So Will, if they can create takeaways by anyone, I don't care who it is, if Ethan Barr can find an interception, if Judy Lawley, anybody, Alan George goes in there, if they can create any sort of takeaways and, you know, kind of push the offense in the back a little bit and say, hey, let's get going, I think they have a shot. But again, that's a big if. So that's my number one. Can Vandy create takeaways?
You said Vandy has a shot against South Carolina there, Billy. We didn't even touch on this. That line, the fact South Carolina, I believe right now, they're sitting at a 19.5 point favorite. South Carolina should not be a 19.5 point favorite over an FCS program. They are awful. And Vandy's bad. They're awful. They're both bad. It's just the name, Vanderbilt having the cachet this year because they lost to ETSU in week one. South Carolina has been equally as bad. Okay. They've been just as bad. Yeah, they have been just as bad as Vanderbilt. So I just want to put that out there before I get into my key one. And key one is creating pressure and disruption. They haven't done it all season, but South Carolina is an opportunity for that defensive line to redeem itself in a winnable SEC game. South Carolina leads the SEC in negative plays with 43. For example, as much as Vanderbilt's offense has struggled, they're actually sixth in the SEC with 31. They also have the second highest sack percentage, only behind Tennessee. By the way, hammer Ole Miss, hammer it. It is the dumbest Vegas line. I will go on record right now.
What's that line?
It is mine. At one point, it was -2.5 for Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a 2.5 point favorite. I have never in my life looked at a line. I was like 16 points off what I thought that line would be. So I don't know what Vegas is doing.
Maybe they know something. That, Will.
Oh, I have an unfortunate amount. I may have to come on and apologize to Tennessee fans, which I never want to have to do. But I'm saying hammer Ole Miss because I am as well. But they have the second highest sack percentage with 8.62% of plays. And Vanderbilt's also not terrible there. When I dug into this, I was actually shocked at a lot of the statistics related to pressure and sacks for Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's actually ranked sixth in the conference, 4.4%. So this defensive line, even though they had no sacks last week against Florida, they did play a little bit better, I would say. And they have an opportunity this week to prove that they are not as bad as they have shown throughout this year and that they can live up to those expectations that we had going into the season.
I'm with you. And, you know, again, if that D-line can get a semblance of pressure, just like the takeaways, again, that pushes Vanderbilt to a closer shot of this game. So I'm with you there, Will. I'm going to go number two here with a guy that we – I thought it was hilarious on Twitter. We said Patrick Smith for Heisman, but the way he played, you know, that, if he can do that, that gives Vanderbilt another shot. So my question for number two is, can Patrick Smith create a spark once again? And he set a career high of 75 rushing yards at Florida. And in SEC play, Will, here's a stat for you, Mr. Stat. He ranks second among the league's freshmen in rushing yards per game at 44. Now, he hasn't had as many carries as you know, a lot of those guys, but that's kind of an eye-popping number. And if he can keep that going, that'll give this offense some momentum. Obviously, South Carolina will be prepared for him due to what they saw on the Florida film. I mean, if Shane Beamer doesn't prepare for him, that'll be a huge mistake. But I'll be interested to see if he plays with the same type of juice and intensity that he brought in Gainesville. And Will, there wasn't much room at all during most of those runs. We saw it. The fumbled snap, he ended up gaining 7-8 yards on that one. And he was creating his own momentum for the offense. And boy, do they need more people like that. If Vanderbilt can find a few more guys like Pat, and if he can run hard and create more opportunities, that'll open up some of the read option play calls. So I think he'll give Vandy a kickstart. And I think this offense will feed off of him just like they did against Florida. But again, that's also hindering on the O-line. But for Patrick, he doesn't need creases. He just runs it and give him the ball. So again, Patrick Smith is my second key.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a key, and I thought about it. I actually did see that key of yours. I read yours. I cheated because we usually have pretty similar keys, so I had to make sure I wasn't just going to run down through the list. But my key was actually not Patrick Smith. It was to watch the split in the backfield, because what I saw on the depth chart is Rocco Griffin is still the starter and Patrick Smith is the backup. Yes. Which I don't necessarily agree with. I would rather see the explosive playmaking ability of Patrick Smith, especially this week against the South Carolina team that is, let's just say, they give up a lot of rushing yards. They gave up 250 yards rushing to. They got dominated by Tennessee. Yeah. It's not the passing game. which may be good for Vanderbilt, but it all comes down to the offensive line. And so for my key two, it's not Patrick Smith, but it is explosive plays. Vanderbilt is dead last, and it's not close. Vanderbilt only has 32 explosive plays all year. And that is only second. Oh, it's actually
third. What does that mean, explosive plays, when you say that?
It would be explosive plays. I believe it's 15-plus yard plays. So plays that move the ball down the field an exceptional amount. Okay. So 15-plus yards, I believe, or 10-plus. I don't know exactly how it defines it, but it's a metric. It's a deep S&P metric stat. So
they're at the bottom.
They are at the bottom is basically what I'm saying in explosive plays. They have 32 on the year. Mississippi State has 30, but Mississippi State runs less plays than Vanderbilt, so they actually have a higher percentage of explosive plays. And this also goes into the first quarter, and these have to happen early. Vanderbilt is averaging 69 yards per game in the first quarter. Nice. But there are only four other teams in the SEC under 100 yards per game in the first quarter, and there's none below 80. That is crazy to think about how poorly this offense has performed. If you thought the stats I was reading off were bad for the entire game, you should go on to secstatcap.com and dig into those first quarter stats, because my God, it's amazing. Because the offense in quarters 2 and 3 and 4 isn't good by any stretch, but they're not that bad. Where it all comes down to is Vanderbilt digs a hole in that first quarter and they can't get out of it. It happened against ETSU. They dug out of it against UConn and Colorado State. But they of course, aren't going to be able to do that against any SEC opponent. So South Carolina, even with how poorly they've performed this year, they have to start early, start successfully, and hopefully we can see an actual explosive play in that first quarter.
I'd love to see the offensive script for South Carolina. I'd love to see. We'll never get our hands on one, but, boy, it's going to be interesting to see how much they might shift offensively, especially with the obvious displeasure with Joey Lynch. So, and what the offense is doing. So let's roll in here. This has been a long segment one, but let's recap with our third key. And I'm going to start with the offense and finishing drives. And we talked about that against Florida, and it's obvious the reason they didn't score, they couldn't finish drives. They matched Florida in yards in the first half, over 200 yards. And if this offense sputters on drives again this weekend, they don't have a puncher's chance. They just don't. And the offense, they showed what they're capable of in the first half against Florida. We know what they're capable of. But for them to go out there and do it, that's a whole nother step. So, and again, they matched Florida's yards in the first half. I think most Vandy fans would love to see a lot more creativity. This is obvious from Joey Lynch on offense, especially in scoring position. You can't be relying on Joseph Bulavis to make kicks against an SEC team. That's not going to win you games in this conference. I'm not saying that as a slight to Joseph Bulavis. We love the guy. He's big like Joe. But touchdowns are what you need in this conference, and not field goals. Now, touchdowns are what you need against Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, but I think they could squeak by with a couple Bulavis field goals. But in the fourth quarter, you got to score touchdowns. You have to. And there can't be any conservativeness with this offense. There just can't. So with that being said, Bulavis also has to hit field goals, but you can't be relying on that. You can't be, okay, we'll set Joe up for a field goal here, but that sets you behind the eight ball. So, Will, can this offense finish drives? I don't have the answers. You don't have the answers. I don't know if anyone does, but bottom line is, Will, they need to have a guy step up and make a play. That's the bottom line. Go out there and make a play, and we'll see if they can. And if they can't, they're not going to beat South Carolina.
I mean, to win this game against South Carolina, Vanderbilt's going to have to score their first SEC touchdown of the year. They are. If they don't score a touchdown against South Carolina, South Carolina's going to cover that insane spread if they don't score a single touchdown. So let's just put that out there right now.
That's a pretty obvious fact.
On my own spit right there. But my key number three is, as a whole, how is this team going to respond to everything? It's not just one thing. How is this team going to respond to what happened last week against Florida? There is a very key Vanderbilt player that will not be suiting up on Saturday. How will the team respond to that? The USA Today Network predictions, every single one predicted a South Carolina win, even with South Carolina being 0-3 in conference. So there is a lot of outside noise. Obviously, our article, players see it. That's a lot of controversy, could create tension. There's outside noise on Twitter, social media. They put up 0 points against Florida. They kind of got screwed over. And then you create even more tension related to this stuff leaking out. And then you're also going to say that on the outside, everybody expects Vanderbilt to get dominated by the 13th out of 14 team in the SEC in South Carolina. And that has to be bulletin board material for them. I mean, there's no other way to put it. To unite a team, it's easiest to have a common enemy. Even if you don't get along, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so that is how this team has to look. Even at this point, they have to put aside their differences of this scheme, because you're not going to fire your offensive coordinator in the middle of the year. So make the best of it with what you have right now. Don't look forward to next season and come out and prove everyone wrong that you are good enough to beat an SEC opponent. We haven't seen it in a long time. We didn't see it last year. We haven't seen this group of guys win an SEC game yet. We just haven't. I look at the rosters as 2019 as a completely different team from 2020.
Yeah.
Because it was a ton of turnover. You lost. Mm-hmm. That was the end of the
Vaughn Pink.
Yeah, the Vaughn Pinkney and Lipscomb era was over after 2019 is kind of how I view it. And they haven't won a game. So what have you shown me lately? And I want to, and when we were about to get into predictions, I want to predict a win so badly, but what have you shown me lately, Billy?
Exactly. And we've been, you know, we've tried to be as positive we can on predictions, but you know, that's what it comes down to. And what have you done for me lately? And Will, I'm excited for every game, but I'm really excited to see how this team responds and to see how they take this, you know, whatever, losing to Florida and everything going on, take that and use that as a uniting factor. And you just touched on that, and we'll see. It's going to be really interesting. All right. Well, let's predict this game. And this is, it's hard predicting games, you know, for this season. It's been hard. It was hard last year, but I think the bottom line is I haven't seen this offense perform. Like, you just haven't. So I picked South Carolina 28, Vanderbilt 10. The scoring outputs of these SEC teams have been just decreasing. I guess that's good news. You lost to Georgia 62-0. You lost to Florida 42-0. I don't think South Carolina puts up the amount of points that Florida did. I think they put up 4 touchdowns. I think they score on Vanderbilt's defense. But Will, also, South Carolina is pissed off. Again, Vanderbilt gets a pissed off opponent on the road. And I think Shane Beamer, I think he's going to have his guys ready to play. Shane Beamer cannot lose this game. Now, Clark Lee, you know, if he loses this game, it's you know, the excuse is, hey, we're still building. This is a work in progress. But for Shane Beamer and that fan base, they're not going to be happy with him. So there's a lot of pressure on him and his team. I think that could be a positive factor for Vandy, but we'll see. I think Kevin Harris is just – I think he's just going to be too much. I mean, he ran all over Vandy last season. I could also, though, Will, I could also see a scenario where Vandy finds a way to keep it close. Now, I'm not going to go that way in my prediction, but, you know, with the state of this program, it's just hard to find any sort of victory. You know, you could say the Florida game was a moral victory. It's really hard saying that. But especially against an SEC team, Will, it's hard to find a victory right now. Again, they return home to play Missouri next game. So we'll see. But I'm going to go South Carolina 28, Vandy 10. I think Vandy finds a way to score, which is tough even saying at this point. And I think Bolivis makes a field goal. But I just, you know, at this point, I think a lot of fans don't trust the offense. So I'm going to go South Carolina 28, Vandy 10.
I have wrestled with this score prediction because I can see this being like a 7-3 final score. I legitimately can, just because of how bad these offenses are. I mean, they are dead last, 14th and 13th, and almost every single stat you can find, these offenses are dead last. Now, the defenses are also not very good, and that has been the struggle, is what's worse going into every game. And obviously in the UConn game, it seemed kind of a mix, but there were more points scored because we kind of said the same thing going in. What's worse? Mm-hmm. And in this situation, I just think what these defenses struggle with for the most part on both sides, South Carolina cannot stop the run. Statistically, all year, they're 12th in the conference, right? They're worse than Vanderbilt at stopping the run. Mm-hmm. They are giving up 221 yards per game on the ground. And Vanderbilt, I think, is going to be able to come out and have success. And I think that offensive line, for the first time, you're going to see some holes opened up. And I think Vanderbilt's going to be able to score. But I also know that Vanderbilt struggles stopping the quick passing game, which is what South Carolina is going to want to come out and do. They're the worst in the SEC against the pass in that capacity. Mm-hmm. So I think that there will be a few more points scored than I was initially thinking once I dug in and actually watched some games and dug into the deep stats. So I'm going to go South Carolina 20, Vanderbilt 20, or South Carolina 27. There we go.
Tie
Vanderbilt
game.
20. Yeah, tie game. And Vanderbilt 20. I think that this – this will end up being a game that Vanderbilt is just unable to close late, and South Carolina is able to pull away in that second half. And while 20, like I said last week, that the 42-13 prediction to Florida would actually be a closer game than that score shows.
Yeah.
I think you can expect between like a 7 and 14 point loss for Vanderbilt, but it's going to be a lot further away feeling than that. I think that they're not going to be able to get South Carolina off the field. I think Vanderbilt's going to try to run the ball a lot. And I think this game, the clock is going to get eaten up very, very quickly.
And we'll see. Well, I'm also interested to see what happens in the fourth quarter. Where's Vanderbilt? Where's the scoreboard? But also, how quick can they start off? And there's so many keys. I mean, we separate three keys at the beginning of this pod, but, you know, there's so many keys with this team right now. But there you have it. You know, we've been kind of similar in predictions, but there we'll see. We'll get an answer here on Saturday. Vanderbilt, South Carolina, again, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Set a reminder, SEC Network. Vanderbilt, South Carolina in Columbia. Well, there it is. But coming up, I've got an interview coming up with the founder of the Spurs Up Show. He's got a great show there. They've got nearly 16,000 followers on Twitter. Chris Phillips is his name. He's the host of that show. We've got Chris Phillips coming up from the Spurs Up Show here on the Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floor.
Welcome back into the Door Report. I'm Billy Derrick, and I'm now happy to be joined by Chris Phillips. He is the founder, host, and he's the Spurs Up Show. He runs that over in Columbia, South Carolina. Does a great job. He's got over 15,000 followers on Twitter, so they're doing a great job up there, and they are the premier site for South Carolina athletics. And we're looking forward to this matchup on Saturday. Chris, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man. Really looking forward to it. And a pair of teams looking for their first SEC win of the season. So, you know, it's going to be a fun one. But, no, love what you guys are doing as well. And I appreciate the kind words. And thanks so much for having me. Like I said, looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, let's start here, Chris. Obviously last weekend there were some fans from the South Carolina side really curious to see how they would play against Tennessee because, Tennessee, you saw them basically manhandle Missouri. And, you know, Coach Beamer's club heading into that one last week, I think treated it as a good opportunity. And, you know, they didn't let down the second half. They ended up, you know, making it a little bit respectable. But how surprised were you by South Carolina showing in Knoxville?
Well, as someone that picked South Carolina to win the football game, I was a little bit surprised. You know, my thought process going in that game was either South Carolina is going to win or it's going to go down 28-0. I was very surprised to see them fall down so quickly, so early. You know, there's no way that Tennessee plays that well again back-to-back weeks. Man, they were sharp as ever. And obviously, South Carolina has deficiencies. They have holes. They have areas on their roster they need to fix. Some questionable play calling on the goal line, of course, which we've spent basically all week talking about that. But, I think to see South Carolina lose, was that surprising? Not necessarily, just because you were a 10.5-point underdog. I mean, the Gamecocks, it would have been an upset. And I talked about going in that game. Who was the game more important for? Was it more important for Shane Beamer or Josh Heupel? I think actually it was Heupel. No question. You know, being a home favorite and double-digit home favorite, if Tennessee would have lost that game, it would have been detrimental for Heupel. And obviously that Tennessee fan base, they would not handle a double-digit favorite loss at home very well. So the Gamecocks right now sit at 3-3, and they're kind of right where I think most people expected them to be. I mean, I had them at 4-2 in the preseason. 3-3 does feel about right, though. A football team that's just really struggling up front to run the football, and obviously offensive errors after error after error. But, to lose the game, I don't think that's the surprising part, but it's the fashion in which you lost, being down 28-0 at the end of the first quarter and 38-7 at halftime. So, obviously, again, the Gamecocks are a hurt bunch right now, and they're licking their wounds this week and obviously looking for a big win. And Shane Beamer's first SEC win this Saturday.
Yeah, not only will I think we learn a lot about South Carolina this weekend, but we'll learn a lot about Tennessee this weekend as well. And kind of
big matchup against Ole Miss. Yeah. Huge game.
Yeah, we're starting to learn a lot about the SEC East, Eddie. Yeah. It's been as weird a year in the conference as ever. But I want to go to Clark Lee and Shane Beamer. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know how close they may be, but it seems like the way Shane Beamer has talked about Clark Lee, they go back a ways. And in his presser this week, he said his stamp on that program is very evident. The length that they have on their defense and their size will be a problem for us. So would you say, Chris, that both Shane and Clark are going through similar difficulties right now with their programs? And obviously South Carolina, I would say, is a couple steps ahead of Vanderbilt right now, but kind of the state of the programs and looking at these two teams, especially with how badly they both need this win, how would you compare kind of their trajectories and what they're working with?
Well, obviously Vandy is a unique challenge, right? I think you certainly would obviously attest to that, but when you got a pair of first year head coaches, I mean, they're facing I think, very similar difficulties in regards to, like, it's a bunch of guys that aren't yours. You didn't recruit them. You're really what year one is about, in my opinion. This is what I've been preaching really all preseason, all offseason, all fall camp, and all season still, is year one. You know, we all care about the record, and winning games is very important, but it's more about laying the foundation, laying the groundwork. You know, I hate to call it year zero or the season's a wash, but you know, whether you go 7-5 versus 5-7, that's not an indictment or, you know, a verification that, oh, the program's headed on this trajectory, whatever. The goal of year one, in my opinion, for both Shane Beamer, Clark Lea, every first-year head coach, obviously when you hire a new head football coach, there's optimism, there's a new energy. Obviously, Shane Beamer reflected that tremendously over the preseason. I said, again, you know, the number one goal for Shane Beamer, get to next preseason with the same positive energy and momentum, no matter what the record is. Hey, you can go 4-8. And still have that positive energy momentum. When recruiting falls off, that's when you got to worry. So as long as they can keep doing that. But again, you know, Vandy's its own unique challenge. I think we both agree South Carolina is definitely ahead of Vanderbilt a couple of steps. But yeah, I think it all starts with recruiting and Jimmy's and Joe's, and obviously laying the foundation of your program, instilling that new culture. Of course, South Carolina, what they dealt with the fallout that was Will Muschamp, and you really saw the cracks in the armor, if you will, of what the culture was behind closed doors and just how imperfect that was. So I think Shane's done an incredible job. I mean, Clark Lea, for the hand he's been dealt, I think he's done a pretty fair job. I know it's been a really rough go for you guys in SEC play, but yeah, when you got a pair of first-year head coaches, it's a very similar challenge, I think, for them all. South Carolina's its own unique job. Vandy's its own unique job. Hey, Tennessee's its own unique job with Josh Heupel. But yeah, again, this is a game both very much so need to win. I guess both coaches looking for their first ever SEC win as a head coach.
Yep.
And I will say this. I mean, I think Vanderbilt, I haven't looked at the entire schedule, but this is probably as winnable an SEC game that Vandy's going to have this season. I mean, I don't think Vanderbilt's going to go out here and beat the Kentuckys and the LSUs and the Bamas and whoever else. Obviously, they've already played Georgia and Florida. But, you know, this is – and the Tennessees, of course. So this is as winnable game as Vandy's going to have. And, you know, I think you'll see a very desperate Vanderbilt team and a Vanderbilt team that understands that and knows that. And I think you'll see a desperate bunch of Gamecocks as well that's looking to really bounce back. But, yeah, Clark Lea, Shane Beamer in that first year, both building their programs. It'll be really interesting to watch their trajectory over the next couple of years.
Yeah, every situation is different. I mean, Mark Stoops said it best, and I think – I don't know if you saw his interview last week at SEC Network, but, you know, he went to attend his first season at Kentucky, and now look at them, where they're at right now. It takes time, and especially at these schools. South Carolina has a lot more tradition than Vanderbilt, but, you know, Vanderbilt at this point in his trajectory, you got to – you know, you got to see some improvement. So
yeah, I hate to be so complimentary of Kentucky, but you just really have to tip your cap, man. I mean,
you got to give them credit.
Mark Stoops has done an incredible job, and obviously Kentucky's been a thorn in the side of the Gamecocks, but I mean, you've really just got to tip your cap, man. They've given Stoops time, and you know, I think there were people early on that definitely wanted him fired, but they stuck the course. And you know, maybe Kentucky's not going to the playoff, which, hey, if they beat Georgia though, they might be. But you know, realistically, Stoops has built an incredible program, and a program I think many of us never would have envisioned Kentucky being what they are today.
Yeah. So they expect to win those games now.
You know, ready for them to come back to earth. I can tell you that.
Well, we'll have to see about that. But the Gamecock offense, Chris, they put up 370 yards of total offense against Tennessee, which is a great number. And you know, the quarterback situation has been interesting to monitor. I think before the season, if you were to look at it where it is right now, you may look at it a little bit positively, you know, because of how this has gone. So what can you tell us about that quarterback situation, but more specifically Luke Doty and his progression as the leader of the offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, Luke Doty's just a young signal caller who's figuring out. The thing I like that Luke Doty is doing, again, the starting quarterback's always going to get criticism and, you know, insults hurled his way, and people, you know, the backup quarterback's the most popular guy on campus. And obviously his injury that happened in the preseason, that foot injury.
Zeb Nolan, you're talking about?
Zeb Nolan, yes. The story of Zeb. Wake me up when Zeb Timber ends. I mean, Zeb did well in a fill-in role, but I think no doubt Luke Doty is this team's best option. He's QB1. He's the leader of this football team. I don't think there's any debate there. But I think, you know, all in all, I think Luke Doty, as a young signal caller, has done a pretty good job. The thing I like the most, he's taking care of the football. You know, Luke Doty is not a guy that you, going into the season, you were thinking to yourself, oh, we're going to ask this guy to throw it 40, 50 times and be this All-American player. And, you know, he needs a team built around him. Obviously, he's got a skill set. He can throw the football. I think he throws it much better than people give him credit for. But, yeah, this offense has been a struggle. There's no questions asked. You know, it's funny. I was talking about this on our live show yesterday that you know, the mood of the fan base, Billy, is very interesting because 3-3, the Gamecocks have won the games they're supposed to win and lost the ones they were supposed to lose. If you go by Vegas, right, which Vegas is right more often than not, it seems, right? But the mood of the fan base is sort of down in the dumps and a little bit more pessimistic than I would have expected. And I think a lot of it just simply comes from the lack of offensive output. If this was a team scoring 40 or 50 points per game, but it was still 3-3, I think the mood is much different. So the issues all start with the offensive line for South Carolina. You know, a guy that I really like for Vandy that I think South Carolina's going to have to keep an eye on is Anferny. How do you say his last name?
Anferny. So it's Anferny Orji. It's not necessarily Orji. But it's a little softer J. Yeah,
sorry for butchering Anferny's name on the podcast that dropped today. Hey. I was like, hey, I'm just going to read it as I see it. But no, he's a really good. Yeah, he's a really good player. And you know, offensive line has been this team's problem. You know, I preached all preseason the South Carolina needed to be a 70-30 run to pass team. And maybe that was a little aggressive, but when you look at last year, the SEC's leading returning rusher, hey, Kevin Harris went off in that game in Nashville against the Vanderbilt defense.
Boy, he did.
Really his coming out party, I think, and the Gamecocks have just not been able to find any consistency on the ground, averaging less than 4 yards per carry. And I mean, hey, you had your best rushing day against an FBS opponent against Tennessee. You only had 153 yards. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's where it really starts. And it when you boil it down to it, are there issues with play calling? Sure. And everybody wants to blame Marcus Satterfield and blame the offensive coordinator. And certainly he's not immune to the criticism because he's a first-year guy. He was sort of a flyer hire, if you will, under Shane Beamer, and a guy that, you know, had never called a play, heck, even at the Power 5 level, much less the SEC level before the season. But I don't think it's one thing that's wrong with this offense, man. I tell you this, I think play calling could be better, but certainly personnel, just overall execution, and you got to go find some playmakers. You just do not have a plethora of playmakers around Luke Doty, especially if you can't run the football and you can't take advantage of Kevin Harris and Marshawn Lloyd and Zaquandre White and Juju McDowell. You can't take advantage in that facet. You know, South Carolina's been falling behind the sticks on first down way too much, and they get in third and longs, man. You can pretty much just wrap up the drive because it's not going anywhere. So running the football to me is probably the biggest key for South Carolina's second half. And listen, I think Luke Doty's played fine. If you were asking and expecting Luke Doty to be some all SEC guy and ask him to go out there and throw 30 touchdowns, I think you set very unrealistic expectations. So again, that's what I'll be looking forward against Vandy. Can they finally, you know, is all hope lost for the offensive line, or can they finally get the line going Saturday against the Commodores? But again, you know, a Vanderbilt football team that I think is what averaging giving up 36 points per game. And I know there's been some inflated scores, if you will, but certainly Gamecock fans need to see progress from this offense on Saturday. So.
And South Carolina, historically, they've dominated Vanderbilt. There's right. No way around it. Vandy hasn't beaten the Gamecocks since 2008. So, you know, from a Vanderbilt fan's perspective, there's not a ton of confidence heading into this one. And South Carolina is an 18-point favorite. But for Clark Lee, it's also a huge moment. You know, if he loses a close one, I think that he could still grab some confidence in this one. But with the history of this matchup, what is it about this matchup that South Carolina always finds a way to pull off a win? What is it?
Yeah, it's funny, man. South Carolina going for, 13 straight in the series.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, man. Through the ups and downs of Gamecocks football, I mean, you think of what's happened in Columbia the last decade. I mean, we have seen the peaks, the all-time peaks, 11-win season, SEC championship game appearance, and we have seen the very bottom, 2-8, 4-8. Losing to the Citadel. I mean, the Gamecocks football has been all over the map, but death, taxes, and beating Vandy. That is the one thing that has remained consistent with this football team. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know. You think of the coaches that Vandy had with James Franklin and some of the teams they put out there and some of the good players Vanderbilt had.
There were some close ones there, yeah.
Right. There were some really close games. I think if you're a Vandy fan, you think to yourself, how have we not gotten these guys once in the last 12 years? And again, they've had some really good players come through, and South Carolina just always seems to find a way to beat the Vanderbilt Commodores. So will it be this year? I mean, you got to think at some point Vandy's going to beat South Carolina. It's bound to happen, right? I mean, how long, I guess, you know, Florida had the, you know, 30-year streak over Kentucky or whatever, but it's like, how long can that really go?
Right.
And I mean, what's even more baffling, Billy, in that stretch, we're talking about a Gamecocks football team that lost 5 straight to Kentucky, but still never lost to Vandy. Lost to Vandy. So yeah. I don't know what it is.
That tells you everything you need to know.
Which, though, I'll tell you this, though, man, which makes the attitude going into this football game from Gamecock fans this week, which makes it even more puzzling to me. I understand things have not gone perfectly. South Carolina's 0-3 in SEC play. They've lost to Kentucky. They've lost to Tennessee. I get what's happened. But, yeah, if you're a Gamecock fan, you have to feel confident. It's like, dude, no matter what has happened over the last decade plus, we found a way to beat Vandy. So you'd think, like you said, at home, it's homecoming. The fair's in town. You're an 18-point favorite. I think if you're a South Carolina fan, you should feel pretty damn confident if you ask me. But like you said, man, one of those years, Vandy is going to get South Carolina. Will it be this one? I know the folks in Garnet and Black are hoping not.
Yeah, well, let's go to Vandy. And I know we've talked a lot about South Carolina, but when you throw the film in on Vandy, when Coach Beamer throws the film in, I know you touched a little bit, on the domination last season we saw from South Carolina in that one in Nashville. But what jumps out to you when you watch some of these Vandy highlights?
Well, defensively, again, they're a tough bunch. I think under Clark Lea, obviously the work he did at Notre Dame, and you know he's going to have a certain style and tenacity about his defense. Again, Orgie has been very good for Vandy, and there's some good players there. But again, I think you probably agree, offensively, defensively, special teams, Clark Lee's fighting a fight where he's a little bit undermanned. Bottom line, you know, it's going to take time and it's going to take years to build up the roster and really get those SEC caliber athletes where they can realistically compete week in, week out, and you know, start beating the South Carolinas and the Kentuckys and the Tennessees and kind of get back to, you know, just even what we saw Vandy in the early 2010s and late 2000s, if you will. But offensively, Ken Seals obviously has been a little bit turnover prone, 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Got some really good wide receivers. I like Cam Johnson a lot. Those guys on the outside, I think, are really solid for Vandy. And the run game, you know, for whatever reason, I think of good run game when I think of Vanderbilt. And I know it hasn't quite been there this year. Again, it's tough to judge Vandy because their two SEC games were Georgia and Florida.
Right.
And they lost by a combined score of 104-0. So it's like, how, you know, I mean, where is Vandy that bad? I mean, is there any, you know, I do think Vandy will get on the scoreboard in an SEC game this weekend, but you know, I think Clark Lea, for the hand he was dealt, is doing a good job in year one. He's got a really tough physical team. Like I said, a little bit undermanned, basically all of the roster. He's going to need years to build that up. But again, I would not sleep on the Vanderbilt Commodores. I know it's an 18 point spread, and you know, South Carolina certainly, in my opinion, should win the football game. But I think Vandy's that team. I would not be surprised to see them, you know, come out of the gates one game this year and kind of surprise somebody and pull off a win maybe they weren't supposed to get. But, you know, Vandy will play South Carolina as hard as they can. And, you know, I think for the lack of confidence that I'm sure Vandy has, I'm sure they have a lot of confidence as well, because it's like, man, we've played these guys close no matter what. You know, we've played them very close. So, you know, I think Vandy will come in under Clark Lea probably expecting to win, and it'll be up to the Gamecocks to nix any of those efforts. But, no, tough physical team. I think Lee will do a good job, but he definitely needs time to build the roster.
No doubt, no doubt. And that was pretty damn good analysis for a South Carolina guy. That was impressive. I want to go to the atmosphere that you might expect Saturday. And, you know, we've seen amazing atmospheres in South Carolina, and we all know about, you know, Sandstorm and all that. But for a Vanderbilt game, historically, what is this type of atmosphere like, and what type of crowd environment do you expect to see? You mentioned affairs there, but Vanderbilt's coming into town, South Carolina, a big favorite. What do you expect Saturday?
Well, we'll be throwing our tailgate, so we'll be lit. That's for
sure. Okay, you guys are going to be there.
Oh, we every single week. Hey, win or lose, we booze, and when nobody's here, we drink beer. That's what we say.
Hey, you guys come to Nashville next year.
That's a road trip I've never made. I would love to do so. Yes, that will be in the plans for sure. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, and historically, you know, the crowd has been pretty good, but I don't think it'll be a great crowd Saturday, man. I just think, unfortunately, you know, schools all over the country, by the way, are struggling with attendance and getting butts in that. You know, I just think with all of the opportunities to stream games and to watch every game, and, you know, gone are the days of pay-per-view and listening to game on radios. There's just so many options. And also, hey, prices have gone up. To take a family of four to a football game, it's very expensive. And especially, you know, I really felt for the Gamecocks last week that traveled to Knoxville. I mean, I was like, good Lord, I really feel for you. But, you know, what will the crowd be like? I'm not going to say there's going to be 80,000 in the stadium. I don't think so. And it is homecoming. Another thing is they're honoring the South Carolina Hall of Fame class for this year that includes guys like Michael Roth, Connor Shaw, John Abraham, some Gamecock legends. Yeah. They'll be honoring at halftime, so maybe that brings more people. But, you know, realistically, man, I don't think it'll be a huge crowd. I don't know if you saw the Troy game, but I think a little bit more than that, but probably something similar. It was very scarce in the upper deck. But I don't know, man. I don't want to say the Gamecock fans got a little spoiled with Steve Spurrier, because all we hear is the stories of 98, 99 and going 1-21 and 0-11. And we pack the stadium out every single week. That's just not the case anymore. And dude, even the elites are struggling packing the stadium. So, you know, I think those that are there will be rowdy. They'll be raucous. But I think this is just a Gamecocks fan base, man, that is just so desperate for something good to happen. And, you know, I'm very cautious always to pile on the fan base, because this fan base has been beaten, battered, bruised. I mean, every sense of the word, certainly probably very similar to like Vandy fans. I was thinking about that before we went live. I was like, man, to do a Vandy podcast during football season, you're a brave soul, really.
These fans have been through a lot, but I can't imagine. I feel like this is kind of a therapy session for both fan bases.
Yeah, seriously. So, no, it's, dude, I do a daily live stream noon to two, and that basically is just therapy. That's what it is. I joke with people, the mic is my therapist, you know what I mean? It's who I can rant and vent to. But, Those that are there will be loud. It's homecoming, you know, the fair's in town. But realistically, man, I'll just be honest with you. I'm not expecting some sellout crowd or anything like that. I mean, I've got people reaching out to me. Hey, man, I got 5 tickets. I got 2 tickets. I got 6
usually
tickets.
Not a good sign.
Just giving them away. That's not typically a good sign. So
no.
Maybe I'll be surprised.
Well, maybe you will. Well, I got one more here for you, Chris. The line is 18. We've talked about it, and they're playing at home. So you got to believe, you know, South Carolina is coming in here with confidence. But what's your prediction? South Carolina, Vanderbilt, 4 o'clock Eastern time, SEC Network on Saturday.
Yeah, listen, again, this is a Gamecocks football team that is so desperately looking for a win. You need to see some progression offensively. You know, you saw some hope in the second half of the Tennessee game running the football. Maybe, just maybe, Kevin Harris can get it going against a team, like I said, that he had so much success against last year. Your defense had a really rough game, in my opinion. I think Clayton White has done a phenomenal job this year. Gamecocks leading the SEC in takeaways with 14. You got Jalen Foster with 4 interceptions on the back end. They have 9 interceptions in the hole, which, dude, you look at the secondary last year compared to this year. Totally night and day. The job Clayton White and Torian Gray and Jimmy Lindsay and all those defensive coaches have done has been incredible. I think the defense will have a bounce back day. I think Ken Seals, again, 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, has shown he is willing to put the ball in harm's way. And I think the Gamecocks defense will take advantage. Would not be surprised if it's close early. And again, I think Clark Lee's team will play really hard. And, you know, there will be some very uncomfortable moments for South Carolina. But I think as long as the Gamecocks can just get out of their own way. Don't make stupid penalties. Don't make dumb mistakes. Don't turn the football over. If they can play a clean football game, I think they win. And I think the Gamecocks actually cover the 18-point spread. I'm going to lock it in 31-10. I think South Carolina will get the win. Again, I think that you could see a close game at halftime. You know, the Gamecocks have got issues. They've got deficiencies. They've got imperfections. You know, this may be their last win of the season, but they're not where Vandy is right now. And I say that as respectfully as possible. I think there are some good players on the roster, and I think Luke Doty will continue to be what Luke Doty is. And it's just all comes down to, can South kind of run the football? Can they run the football? I think they'll run it as well as they have all season, especially against an FBS opponent. Are all 31 of the points offensive points? I have no idea, because again, the Gamecocks defense has shown that playmaking ability and that opportunistic nature to make things happen. But, you know, South Carolina desperately needs a win. They desperately need their first SEC win. Shane Beamer needs it. The fan base needs it. The football team needs it. Everybody needs it. I think the Gamecocks will get it. 31-10 is the score I got.
There it is from Chris Phillips. He is the founder of the Spurs Up Show on Twitter. I'm guessing that's Spurs Up Show, right, on Twitter, at Spurs
Up. At the Spurs Up Show, yeah. All across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're on TikTok.
Wow.
Everywhere.
Wow.
Everywhere. YouTube, everywhere you can think of, so.
You get the TikTok community looking.
We're about to hit 10,000 on TikTok, man.
That's crazy. Congrats, man. Maybe we'll have to jump on there with you.
Yeah, dude, it's fun. It's I probably wouldn't have one if it wasn't for my business, but it is a good time. But yeah, we're also iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, everywhere you find them. Also do a daily live stream, noon to 2, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. We take calls, all that good stuff. So
there it is.
Content bleeding out the eyeballs, man. And like I said, best of luck to you guys this weekend. I'm expecting a good game, and you know, we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
2 programs of first-year coaches. We'll see what the trajectory is like over the next couple of years, for sure. We'll book that Nashville trip.
Hey,
I'm dead ass serious.
Let's do it. We'll stay in contact. And, hey, thanks again for coming on, Chris.
Appreciate you, my man. Thank you.